Blog Talk Radio.
On my bedroom wall, the battle rapping for status up in the school hall. Just call me Double Sushi, thought I was too raw. And hip hop was my home, I had my shoes off. 6'3 in high school, skip a hoop dream. If I don't blow up, then maybe I'll try the school thing. I went to college to do my family a favor, but I couldn't pick a major cause I wanted to be major. I tried selling work, but it didn't work. So I worked, chopping center clerk, finna go berserk. Lunch break, see me writing 16s over Mickey D's. Skipping class, making beats over 60 keys. And I love it even though I'm just chasing. Selfish ambition, couldn't tell your boy Nathan. Watch out all you rappers cause they finna let straight in. But I was sleeping on the sun like the day's in. And you can have the money, and you can have the fame. For me, I want the glory, I'm living for the name. See, life is just a picture, I see outside the frame. I'm living for a kingdom that I ain't never seen. And I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Find a key to life and best believe that I'ma play that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that. Glory, I'ma take that, I'ma take that.
Hello. We want to welcome everyone to today's show on Hat Radio. My name is Jason Haynes. I'll be your host for the afternoon on Diversity in College Tennis. Very excited about today's guest today. Today we have Miss Jamia Jackson on the show. Jamia will be here in about 5 minutes, and I'm looking forward to letting her tell you her story and letting her let everyone know what is happening at her current employer, which is Oklahoma State University. We're very excited to have her on the air, and she's going to bring a wealth of information to our radio broadcast and also to our concept as well. I want to remind everyone that this is a HAT radio show. HAT is an acronym that stands for Hispanic, African American, Asian Tennis, and although other minorities such as Indian and Middle Eastern and Native American populations are not mentioned, we are concerned about their plight in American tennis as well. HAT is founded on the premise that tennis is a lifetime sport that can be played by anyone at any level or any stage in their life. HAT is the voice for the underrepresented populations in sports and tennis today, and we seek not only to candidly discuss ways to engage minorities in sports and tennis, but we look to involve the community in our message and develop a steadfast philanthropy. So again, my name is Jason Haynes. I am your host for the next hour. I am a former collegiate tennis coach. I was 20 years in the community college division. I also helped out at the Division I level at Southwest Texas State University. I was a 3-time national champion at the community college level with Lee College, which is located in Baytown, Texas, and elected into the National Junior College Hall of Fame in 2009. I currently work in the Woodlands, Texas, and I am working for FM Tennis Academy here in the Woodlands, and having a blast since I've left to college tennis. I do miss it every once in a while. We are trying to get as many college programs on the air as we can to talk about diversity in college tennis, and having a wonderful time doing that. I'm also the Chief Operating Officer of HAT, and we are always looking for new ideas for shows and new hosts. So if you have an interest, please get in touch with me, and I will be glad to try to help you out. My email address is jason.haynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, at hat, H-A-A-T, tennis.com, and we're going to have a wonderful show today. I just want to let everyone know that the ITA Tennis, the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, is currently making its way up to the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center, where they'll be hosting the USTA/ITA National Indoor Collegiate Championships. As many of you know, we've been following the small college side of this, and we're very excited to get some representatives up into the Division One championships here. It is the only tournament on the ITA calendar that showcases elite players from every level of college tennis. It is played at the USTA National, the indoor facility there. It's hosted by Columbia University, and it's a 32-player singles draw and a 20-team doubles draw for men and women. You're able to gain automatic entry into the tournament if you win a Division I regional championship, which are usually held in October, if you win the Small College Super Bowl, and if you're a consolation finalist or singles quarterfinalist at the Riviera and ITA Men's All-American Championship. So it's quite an event. This is a springboard for success for some players that move on to the U.S. Open. We had Lisa Raymond won the women's title, doubles title there. She's a former national indoor singles champion. The national indoor doubles champion, John Isner, reached the singles quarterfinals. And the 2007 indoor doubles champions, Somdev Devarman and Treat Conrad Huey, won a couple of rounds in doubles. So it's an exciting event. As you all know, we at Lee College are particularly excited about this. We have one of our former players who's going to be competing at that tournament. That's Miss Anna Veselinovich, and we want to wish her the best of luck as she travels to that event, and we hope that she represents us well. We are very excited to have a person up at that event. Other than that, you know, there's not a lot going on in the college tennis world right now. We do have a few fall tournaments that are left, but a lot of the colleges are winding down their seasons. I know the small college Division IIs in particular have hung up their shoes for the winter season, as they're only allowed to participate in, I believe it's 45 days of a practice and competition in the fall. I know that the community college level, we would practice all the way up until Thanksgiving and try to give the kids a nice break to get ready for finals after that. So I know that there are lots of coaches that do still have events, and we're looking forward to seeing more of them in the spring. As far as the professional events go, we do have a couple of indoor tournaments that are happening right now. Federer got back on the court this week. We were able to he was able to go back home to Basel, and he's having some success there. He was kind of surprised this week whenever it looks like that Andy Murray, he took a wild card entry into the tournament and surprised him a little bit there. So it should be an interesting event in Basel. So we're looking forward to seeing what happens there this week. And the ladies just finished up their WTA, their season-ending tournaments there. Kvitova, she beat Sam Stosur in the final over there. So I want to wish her congratulations, as she did finish up the year very strong. So at any moment, we'll expect Jamia Jackson to come on the air. For those of you that are interested in calling in today and talking to us, the call-in number is 714-583-6853. And again, that's 714-583-6853. So we're looking forward to the event of getting Jamia Jackson on the air. For those of you that aren't real familiar with Jamia Jackson, Jamia is a former WTA Tour player. She reached a high, if I'm right, in the top 50 WTA Tour. She was as high as number 45 in the world in 2006. and she competed in all four Grand Slams and was able to represent the United States as a member of the Federation Cup team. And she helped the U.S. squad defeat Germany that year. She is now an assistant coach at Oklahoma State University, and we're excited to get her on the air today. She has been there just a short time, and she has an impressive resume. She's been able to serve as the USTA Women's Collegiate Summer Team Coach, working with 12 of the top collegiate athletes from around the country, and she's also helped head coach Chris Young guide Oklahoma State to its best finish in 3 years in 2010, and very excited about getting her on the air. So should expect her to call in at any moment. In the meantime, we can talk a little more about small college tennis. I want to remind everybody that this week at that ITA Tennis Championships, there are small college representatives there. Remember, small college is a unique event. It gets the championships. It gets Division II, III, NAI, and junior college divisions all at the same place out in Mobile, Alabama. And these players compete head-to-head. In the end, you crown just one singles champion, one doubles champion on both the men's and the women's side for the entire tournament. We're very excited because, for two reasons, actually, you know, and I don't mean to slight the women's doubles champions at all. It looks like that we've got Anna Veselinovic again from Lee College. She's going to be there in the doubles. We do have a freshman from Tyler Junior College, Carrie Cartwright, and her partner, Miss Audra Leitz. They will be representing the women's side there, so very excited that they're up there and want to wish them luck this weekend. We also have looks like on the men's side, a little different story there. The junior colleges were not as successful and don't have the representation that the women do with their play. On the men's side, the representatives for the men's programs, will be, just 1 second, Rollins Lucas Jovita. He defeated Emery Riddle's Chris Freeman, and he'll be set to play up there. And then also in the doubles, we have Valdosta State, the duo Christian Hansen and Luis Leffler, they defeated Williams College, Brian Chow, and Richard Meyer in that doubles final. So we want to wish all those small college champions, we want to wish them the best of luck, and we look forward to seeing their results for the next week. So not quite sure why Miss Jackson hasn't called in. We'll try to figure out that as we go along through this show. Again, if you have a question you want to call in, then call in at 714-583-6853. I'd be glad to entertain you until we get Miss Jackson on the air, and looking forward to hearing from her. While we've got some time, I'll just take some time to kind of reflect back on some things that have been happening here on HAT since I joined. If you remember back in May of 2011, I was able to come on board and start hosting this show. I co-hosted it for a short period and then took this show over after that, and I am very excited in the direction that it's moved. I've been able to entertain several great college coaches with the history of diversity in their background, and get a variety of opinions from each of them to kind of further along American tennis. We've had Coach Dick Gould from Stanford on air, and he's one of the most successful coaches in college tennis. We also have had some young up-and-coming coaches with Allison Ojeda from Baylor University, and we were excited to have her on the air. And we also have had such interesting guests as Diane Milutovic. Diane was a Title IX law representative for a school out in San Jose State, and now has become an advocate for Title IX issues. And we've also had last week a very exciting guest, Dr. Ray Brown, who offered a unique perspective on tennis and the direction it's going in. What I have learned so far in this world of diversity is that it seems like that American college coaches, American tennis teachers, American professional coaches, as they go along through this, we're looking for more time. We need more time on the courts. We need our kids to spend more time in the conditioning area. We need more time, or we need the school day to actually shorten up in time for these kids so that we can spend more time on the court. It seems like that the international population is spending a good amount of time in learning how to hit a tennis ball, and they are drilling the heck out of those tennis balls, and they are having a huge amount of success in the world tours, in the ATP and the WTA, but also in the realm of the college tennis. If you are a true fan of college tennis, you know that the major universities, with the exception of a handful of these schools, have to rely on international students to populate their tennis programs so that they can compete at a high level. And our hope is that these players will continue on to become U.S. citizens. A lot of them do, and they're able to contribute healthily to American tennis and American society. We also understand that there needs to be more development in American players. It seems as though we have a lot of point chasers out there in the U.S. tennis, and these point chasers aren't necessarily interested in college tennis, in pursuing the best college tennis. What it seems as though is they, if they're not going to get their scholarship to University A, they're probably not going to play at University B. They really go to University A and party it up and have mom and dad pay for education, then get a free education. And it's an interesting world that we live in with that kind of philosophy. I'm not quite sure how American tennis is going to grow if the top players aren't ready to compete at a place where they're wanted, number one, but they don't want to go to. How does a kid, let's just say Johnny Springwater, and he is recruited by Stanford University, he's recruited by USC, University of Texas, and he has his heart set on going to the University of Texas, and University of Texas is not going to offer him a scholarship. So he decides, well, I'm just not going to play college tennis. I'm just going to go to University of Texas. Mom and dad can afford to pay for school, so I'm not going to go participate in college tennis and have a lot of ambition to see if I can make it nationally at the collegiate level and then see if it can happen internationally. And we know in the tennis world, we are losing some of our best athletes to some of the other sports. We know that for a fact that if in our world here in the hat world, that if we could have gotten a hold of Michael Vick, if we could have gotten a hold of Adrian Peterson, if we could have gotten a hold of Albert Pujols. I even think that name. You know, if we had gotten a hold of them as tennis players at age 10, 11, and 12, they would have done our sport well. These young men, you know, in the basketball world, you take a Kobe Bryant, you take a LeBron James, they are centered on basketball in the inner city, and that's primarily because in the inner city you have a basketball court in most of the parks and a large field or play area where you can throw a football or a baseball the length of a good distance. And so tennis has to do a better job of getting inside the inner cities. It has to do a better job of getting into the families of these inner city kids. We've got to do more to open up ourselves to the inner city. There are young men and young women out there like Serena and Venus that need some recognition, that need a little help, a little bump, a little nudge here or there in the right direction to get them from the inner city out to the big tournaments in the United States. So it was interesting. One of my former guests, Mr. John Wilkerson, John let me know that the USTA should quit scouring the top of the ranks and start going for the bottom of the ranks. These are the kids that want it the most, but maybe they just can't travel like they need to, and that's a hard situation. You know, mom and dad are working 9 to 5, paying minimum wage, and they just cannot afford to send their child out to these tournaments that are all over the U.S. So if you have any questions about this or want to comment on this, call me at 714-583-6853. I'd love to talk to you. Still looking for Jamia Jackson. We'll hope she'll come on the air. I hope she's okay and nothing's come up really bad, but we're looking forward to talking to her shortly. Again, the number is 714-583-6853. So back to what John Wilkerson said, go after the lower-ranked players. And, you know, I'm a believer in this. I used to, at the community college level, go after the kid that was maybe from rural Texas. These players did not get a lot of exposure because they did not travel a lot. They played basketball. They played volleyball. They played tennis. They ran track. They were in one-act play. They were on the debate team. They danced. They chess team. You know, they were involved in so much stuff that it was hard for them to zero in on one particular sport. And I think that if there were more opportunities given to these kids at the right age in rural America and the inner city America, that U.S. tennis would get back on track and dominate. You know, we believe here at HATH that the top five U.S. players on both the men's and the women's side will be nationally ranked players, and we believe that they will be the ones that carry the torch further into the 20th century, and so we're excited about that. Now, I think I have either a guest or a caller here, so let me see who this is and bring him in. Is this Miss Jackson?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Miss Jamia Jackson. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Having a good afternoon here in the Woodlands, Texas. We got 70 degrees, and I'm going to the tennis court after this show, so I'm excited about that.
That sounds like a good day.
It sure is. So let's jump right into this, Jamia. Why don't you tell the people out there a little bit about yourself? I've been trying to help them out, but it's always best to hear it from you, so go ahead.
Yeah, my name is Jamia Jackson. I am originally from Atlanta, Georgia. Grew up there, first picked up a racket there at the age of 7 years old. So started out on, like, my local public courts with my godfather, actually. So he was a coach. He started me off, and that's how I started playing. When I was 10 years old, I won the ATA national tournament, and that actually won me a week-long scholarship down to Ball Terry Sports Academy in Florida, and I went down there with my parents and my family, my brother, for spring break 1 year. And actually, the craziest thing happened. I was taken to Nick's court after one of the coaches saw me, like within 15 or 20 minutes of being out there on court, and Nick watched me hit for a little bit, and then sat me down and offered me a scholarship. So I took it, and from 11 to 17, I was down at Ball Terry's, in and out, worked some with USTA, but mostly with Nick and his staff, and turned pro at 16, and went on to play on tour for 6 years, reached a career high ranking of number 45 in the world before I got hurt, and actually had three surgeries, two on one of my right hip, one on my left hip, and then one on my stomach. And I had to retire because of them, but now, and for the last 2 years, I have been the assistant coach at Oklahoma State University. So that is my story.
It's a fascinating story, Jamia. I mean, you are exactly the type of person that Hat is interested in. You have a background that we're interested in here. It sounds like desire drove you from Atlanta to Ball Terry's Academy. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, not only desire, but for sure a crazy, crazy lucky coincidence of events in succession helped me make my way down there. Yeah, before I went, I really had no idea what was remotely possible in the game of tennis. And I was surrounded by a lot of athletes. Growing up, my dad played pro football, and my brother's godfather played pro football, and everyone I knew was basically a college athletic star in some way. So that was my goal overall, to college on a scholarship. And I mean, as a female, I didn't think really pro was an option in any sport. And it wasn't until I went down to Ball Terry's that I really, really knew, you know, okay, it's a possibility. It was kind of around the time that the Williams sisters were starting to make a splash. And so that became my goal. So it was like a lot of things happening at just the right time to even have that become a goal for myself.
I mean, Jamia, you win the ATA tournament, and is your first thought, I'm going professional? Is that what happened there? How did that work out?
No, I mean that kind of started it, because it wasn't until I went to Ball Terry's and I sat down with Nick, and during that first conversation, actually, I mean, he told me, you know, I think you can be a professional. I think you can be number one in the world. And I think kind of a lot of kids say that growing up, but I had no idea what that meant or what it entailed. And like I said, my main goal was with college. Even after I won the ATA, it was not until like I first stepped foot at Ball Terry's, now, you know, IMG Academies down in Florida, that like I really took that on as a goal and started training like someone who wanted to be a professional tennis player.
Yeah, that's great. Now, how long were you on the professional tour altogether?
About 6.5 to 7 years. My last year, I didn't really play at all. So my last tournament was the U.S. Open 70, and I retired like in August 2009. So like I played pretty much consistently for about 6 years.
Okay, so tell us the good things about the professional tennis level.
I mean, I guess I have to start off with, I mean, it's very different from the guys to the girl side. So everything I say is definitely only applicable to the WTA tour. The good parts are, you know, it's different. You get to travel around, and you get to meet a lot of interesting people, and you get to compete. That's probably the best part about it. That's what I miss the most, the competition. Playing the best players and, like, the feeling you get after a win. I mean, that never gets old, no matter how young or old you are. So that was something that I look forward to like, on a regular basis, and that's what I train for. You know, it's a pretty good life, you know, when you look around and, you know, you do, you make more for sure than when I was on tour now, because they basically doubled prize money from when I retired, and people look out for you. You know, you're a professional athlete who will take care of a lot of things for you, which is what I learned when I retired, that things don't really take care of themselves like I thought they did. So, you're definitely blessed. There are worse things that you could do in this world than play on the WTA Tour, for sure.
Yes, ma'am, for sure. I could name about 100 worse things that you could
do.
Sure. Now I won't have you name them all, but can you just give us a couple of the bad things about professional tennis?
It's tough. I think the travel is probably the first thing that anyone would name. I mean, it is a blessing. You get to see a few things, you know, but see different cultures and meet people from different places, and that's cool, but it really is a grind, week in, week out, to be a different place, and the jet lag and be away from family and friends, that is really, really tough, and it weighs on you as the year goes on. So that's definitely one of the toughest parts of it. Number two is, you know, like, I think anyone can glean that it's not the homiest of atmospheres. You know, everyone is out competing for their bread, and people are serious about it. They've been serious about it since they were little kids. And so you kind of find your small group of friends, which I think for most players extends to your country, women, or for a lot of the countries, your countrymen. And that's all that you do, like, that's all you hang out with. Those are your best friends. And then, of course, it's always awkward when you have to play them. So, I think the overall atmosphere of the tour was pretty tough to deal with. And, you know, like, you just have to be really, 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 really tough. And I think that it made me really tough, and it's prepared me for a lot of life's other challenges. But, I mean, you have to know that if that's, like, the life that you're going for, that you want, that it's not just Grand Slams. That's a very small part of what people see, like the big tournaments and the Grand Slams and the prize money and all of that. Like, that's not a big part of it. I mean, you have to pay for everything. You pay for all of your travel, so it's not like the NBA or the NFL or anything. And you have to grind it out at tournaments where there's not a ton of prize money and there's not, you know, nice places to eat. And the majority of the time, it's not very glamorous. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's I've heard that a lot. You know, we only get to see in the tennis world, we only get to see really the four big tournaments. We don't see what it's like on a week to week basis and how you lose. You know, I have heard this a lot. You know, professional tennis is really the only sport where you have to be prepared to lose every week. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if it's the only sport. I think that honestly, looking at it in another light, that actually is one of the things that I always enjoyed about tennis, was that there was always another week. It's not like gymnast or ice skater or whatever who have these international competitions, but they're basically training for the Olympics. And that's, like, all that matters. And that one, like, two-week period is there what the last 4 years of their life has gone into. And tennis isn't like that. You know, you have the four Grand Slams, these four huge tournaments every year, and a bunch of, like, other pretty big tournaments kind of peppered and sprinkled here and there. And so, like, you can look at it that way for sure. But I always kind of looked at it as, okay, well, this week didn't go, like, as well as I would have liked, but there's always another opportunity next week. So,
very good, Jamia. Now, I have a series of questions here. These are some fun questions. Kind of give everybody a little more of a background about you as a tennis player. So we'll start with, when did you start playing tennis? At what age?
I was seven.
7 years of age. And was there a family member that introduced you to tennis?
Well, I mean, my parents played. Like, I think there was a point in time where everyone kind of played tennis during, like, the Arthur Ashe, Jimmy Connors type era, and so they camp in that. But they didn't really play that much anymore. Like, they were just taking my brother to a camp and dropping him off, and I cried and I bawled, and so they let me stay and play. So.
Now, who is your favorite all-time tennis player?
Favorite all-time tennis player. I mean, like, I can't really choose between the Williams. I mean, they were so inspirational to me, both of them. And when I was young, like, Venus was so dominant. And then as I got older, like, Serena really, like, carried the torch from then on. So both of them were extremely inspirational to me and still are. So I can't choose just one.
Okay. You're a very centrist girl here. So let's see here. How about your favorite tennis racket of all time?
Of all time. Well, that was the last racket I played with, Dunlop 500. I loved my racket. I love it till this day. I still have them. Yeah, most people, like, want to make fun of the Dunlop and call it a Dunlap, but those who really know, like, that's where it's at.
I see. Very good. Some great players play with Dunlop, you know, McEnroe
yes,
and Graf.
Yeah, now, like, it's coming back, yes. Like, people don't know it yet, but I told you, you, like, learned it here first.
Very, very good. I'm glad to hear that Dunlop's getting a plug here on the show.
Yeah, there you go. Right.
Let's see now. What was the best piece of advice someone gave you as a player?
That's tough. I mean, I guess what my dad always used to tell me was, like, and I think it's a quote. I believe that it's Frost, but I could be wrong. Just you can't get too high with the highs or too low with the lows. Like, I think that was something that he said, like, once or twice that kind of stuck with me my whole career. When he started, it is tough. Like, you're covering everything and, you know, you're just figuring out, you're stepping up to a new level and you're getting slapped down some. And I think a lot of players, especially that I've seen now, like, a lot of players coming out of the college arena, especially, like, it's really, really difficult, a difficult transition. And I think they're kind of understanding that better and better. Like, they win so much at this level. A lot of juniors win so much at the junior level. And then you go to the pro level and everyone's so good that it just simply isn't going to be that way when you first start. And so I think that helped me really persevere through my first couple years, is just, you know, not letting, you know, every win be so amazing or every loss be so bad that I could kind of stay the course with it despite what happens. So.
Yeah, that's great advice. Great advice. Tennis players need to hear that more often, for sure. And that's going to lead me into, now this is a hard question for you, because I'll share with you that some of my guests don't have quite the achievements that you might have as a professional tour player. So what is your biggest achievement as a player? And I'll share with you, some people come on and say, you know, I won the junior high tournament when I was 13. I beat Joe Bag of Donuts, who you should know. So you just tell me what your biggest achievement as a player was in your mind.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to say, and I tell my girls this, that I think anytime you win a tournament, it's a big deal, because it's never easy, no matter what level you're at, to win a tournament, get through all the rounds, all the different challenges that you confront, no matter what the level is, no matter who you're up against. I think that's tough. So that should definitely be commended at every level. And then to further answer your question, for me, my biggest accomplishment was, without a doubt, absolutely playing Fed Cup. It was phenomenal, the entire experience, and me and, well, I guess the teammates that I went into and me, we were underdogs in every way, shape, and form, and we were kind of, I want to say we were dogged out a little bit by American sportscasters and tennis players. Like, everyone kind of didn't think we had a chance, and we really pulled together and won for our country. And I think we all talked about, all of us who played, talked about, you know, the first time like the first game we won, it being, you know, not Game Jackson or Game King or Game Perry or anything like that, but it being like Game USA. And that was just like the feeling. I think I didn't even know. I mean, I always was super patriotic, but I didn't even know like the level of patriotism that was within me until that moment. And forever, like, I think I had some big wins and I had some great tournaments and stuff in my career, but that was without a doubt the most amazing experience and the most, I was like most honored to be in that arena more than any time other time in my career. So,
no, oh, very good, Jamia. It's kind of odd to me that your one of your favorite moments was a team event. You know, and now you're into college coach. You really like that team atmosphere, don't you?
Oh yeah, I love it. And that was, you know, one of my few experiences with tennis as a team sport. It was that, and so I was so excited to come to college, and this delivered beyond what I even expected. Just the team environment, and it's like I said about the tour, the atmosphere is pretty tough, and the atmosphere on a college team is completely different. It couldn't be more different, and it was a welcome change, absolutely.
Oh, I understand entirely. Now, the last question I have here on this level is, who is your ideal doubles partner?
Ooh, ideal doubles partner. Yeah, I did not play a bunch of doubles when I played on tour. I was hurt a lot, which was kind of the story of my career, but let me think.
Anybody out there, it doesn't have to be somebody you played with. If you had a chance to play one doubles match and you got to pick anybody, who would it be?
I would love to play with, I don't know. I would say I would love to play maybe with, like, Shanae Perry. Like, she's
okay.
One of my best friends, and we had a blast whenever we hung out all the time. And so I think any one of my buddies, if I could just – because doubles is always a lot of fun for me. So if I could just play with someone and it could just be a lot of fun, I would definitely do that. That'd be cool.
Very good. And you, I know, and you know how important it is in the collegiate tennis world that doubles is a big point.
Oh, my gosh,
in these...
it's huge. Oh, yeah, it's huge. It's definitely looked at in a different vein than it is a little bit in juniors and on tour. I think that's changing in on tour and in juniors, and I think it should. I mean, doubles is so much fun. And, oh, yeah, I'd love to play with Carly. Carly Gellickson and I play a ton in juniors, and, I mean, she was just so talented and amazing doubles player, and her and Travis won U.S. Open. Mixed, I think, two years ago. So, yeah, so that would be a lot of fun as well. That would be another person I would name. So,
well, I noticed you steered away from picking one of the Williams sisters. That's that true centrist form that you have there. You didn't want to spread
it. I love to put them there. Yeah, I just didn't want to be like, you got to spread it around. You got to spread
it around. I understand. I understand entirely. Very good. So along with the doubles, as you move further into college coaching, what's the biggest difference between pro tennis and college tennis?
I think the focus on tennis is a little bit different. Obviously, when you're on tour, it's all about tennis all day, every day. And so you give 100% on court, you know, for the 4 hours that you're out there, or and then, you know, the couple hours that you do fitness or training or anything else. And then you go on about your day and you have so much time, and it's just very, very relaxed. Whereas it's very, very intense for a short period of time and then very relaxed off court. And, you know, in college, like, you just have so many other things to focus on, from your schoolwork, obviously that's number one and most important, but obviously also the girls are having a bunch of new experiences and they're experiencing being away from home for the first time. And so I think the challenges are very different, and just the focus on tennis is different with the other responsibilities you have to meet. So it was like kind of an adjustment in my thinking to see how much the girls like have to do off court. So as opposed to like when you're tennis, you just rest, and that's like one of the biggest difference. So it's huge.
And Jamia, now you have along with Coach Young at Oklahoma State. You have raised the level of that Cowgirl tennis program. You play in one of the toughest tennis conferences in the United States of America. You had some success at your regional tournament. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, Chris and I came in here 2 years ago, and it's been a lot of building. We had growth from the previous coach, and now we kind of have a few girls that we've brought in ourselves, and a couple more Americans, and just girls who came in with us and kind of know our philosophy and are committed to it, coming in knowing that that was the way that it was going to be. And it's just this year has been really, really good. And at regionals, we had most of our players in the round 16 in the singles, and two of our doubles teams were in the semis, and then we had one in the finals, which is a tremendous improvement over last year. And it's definitely got us excited for the season, as doubles was one of the places that we struggled a lot last spring. And as you said, I mean, doubles was so important in the college arena. So things, you know, still baby steps, and still just taking it one day at a time and getting the girls better, and constantly improving the tennis on and off court, the mental, the physical, but things are definitely starting to turn around here. And Big 12 is tough, as you said. So we got to have our everything together going into this season in order to do well, and I think the girls are committed to that. So I'm excited to see how it goes. I think it's going to be good.
You're very fortunate in the Big 12. We've had Allison Ojeda on the show. Baylor's doing a great job in representing the conference, top five nationally, top 10 nationally each year. You have another school, UT, Texas A&M, Oklahoma State now moving its way up into those groups. What's different since you got there 2 years ago and now?
I think, you know, our girls are definitely more proud to be part of Oklahoma State, and they're starting to compete like it. And I think that, you know, we've always had the past few years they've been, and I mean, Oklahoma State has been good in tennis, you know, historically, just kind of in the last few years, not as high as we would like. And so they've always had talent here. And as you know, Lori McNeil played here, and she was definitely their best player, and what a great player she was. So I think we're just kind of starting to restore some of that tradition, and the girls have some pride, and they're competing hard for each and every point. So there's not a lot of freebies being given away anymore. And I think that's indicative of the Big 12 in general. I think that we're getting better in each and every single sport. And, you know, we want to see all the Big 12 schools doing well, but we want to be the best. So we're inspired, and we're working hard. And I think that all those, like, little things are going to make a big difference. They're going to come together for us. So,
well, I thank the good Lord for Oklahoma State football this year, because everybody else in the Big 12 doesn't seem to be doing that well. So,
it's been exciting. How exciting was Saturday's game? I mean,
it was
so packed. The atmosphere was amazing in there. It's exciting. I'm excited to be a part of Oklahoma State athletics right now, that's for sure.
But now I noticed that y'all have one more tournament to go. That's in Florida, is that right?
Yes. There is just it's not really a particular like college event. It's I mean, only college players are playing, but it's put on by a country club down in Florida, and Dick Vitale, it's at his home. Yeah, and it's just a big deal. It's actually kind of just a really, really fun weekend for the players. It's on clay, and so it really, really varies from a lot of college tournaments normally, and it's such a great tournament. They do a phenomenal job, so a lot of good teams are going to go, and the competition's going to be fantastic. So the girls will go, and they'll have a really good weekend and get some good competition to finish off the fall. We're definitely excited about it.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Jamia, let me ask you, you know, this is a kind of a serious question here on Hat that we're pursuing here is, and you in particular can help us out with this. What do we need to do to have better participation of minority groups in the sport of tennis?
Yeah, I think obviously the number one part of having more participation is exposure. You know, it is such a big country, but I think that we are doing a better job and we can continue to do a better job of bringing tennis to the masses. But for me, I think it was really, really exciting to be at Hard Courts this year and see, I think it was 9 out of the 16 players left in the draw were minority players, which, you know, Hard Courts is the biggest junior tournament USTA of the year. So it was, for me, it was definitely a barometer of how things have changed for the better. I mean, there definitely was not that number of minorities when I was coming up. But you look at the overall draw, and that was kind of the overall number. So that just shows, you know, how once the sport's kind of brought in, that the minorities really are excelling. And I just think it's more of a reason to kind of bring it to the masses. But on top of that, even more so than exposure, I think that we have to do a little bit better job of following up. And I definitely have seen, like, my fair share of, like, camps and things being done in minority-heavy areas, but there's not a lot of follow-up, and so the kids don't stick with it, and they don't have success with it, and they don't compete. And until, like, we can actually get in and get a grip with the minority players, then it's not gonna last long, and other sports are gonna take the forefront and get a lot of the minority players and a lot of, like, the talent that we have in those areas. And so I think the USGA is doing a pretty good job of reaching out and to minority coaches and kind of teaching them USGA and overall, like, tennis-specific things, so the kids will have good coaching coming up, and sticking with young players for longer as well, instead of just hitting and moving on. It's more of a long-term thing, and that's just got to be done more and more and more and more, so that the kids, like, aren't just exposed, but they're hooked, and then they're playing instead of just one day out of the park playing. They're playing tennis and in tennis for a lifetime. So there are definitely a lot of great programs. I know Katrina is doing a great job up in New York. One of our players' little sisters actually is in that program, and she just raves about it. So Olivia is doing an excellent job in Jacksonville. So just the more, like, us foreign players get involved, and the more programs there are that really, really take kids through the process to get them to become players, more so than just kind of getting them out of bad situations, but showing them and educating them on all the possibilities and all the opportunities that, like, exist in tennis, the more minority participation we'll have, and numbers will keep growing. So,
well, I completely agree, Jamia. I mean, we often lay it out there and say that if LeBron James, Michael Vick, Adrian Peterson, if they had been given a tennis racket at the age of 10, 11, and 12, that they would have not played those professional sports they're in, but probably would have played tennis and been great at it. Do you think that's the case?
I mean, absolutely. They're such amazing athletes. Like, it was actually a pretty cool thing happened here the other last night. Like, Kevin Durant came and played a flag football game with, like, some of the intramurals here. And we were talking to some of our players. Yeah, it was amazing, who, you know, heard about it on Twitter and, like, ran out there. And they were just saying how athletic he was and how agile he was. And, you know, he's 6 foot something, and he's so fast, and he's so agile, and he, like, could throw, and he can, I mean, he could do it all. And so there's no doubt that when that's what it's for. You want to put the programs together and really expose the kids and identify the talent early on and the athleticism, and those are the people who are going to become good players, and just make sure that they learn the right fundamentals, like, right off the bat. And then, I mean, they really just can't be stopped, so.
Well, Jamia, it sounds like you're kind of given the idea that maybe we need to go hit these NBA players, these professional football players when they're on their lockouts, and put tennis rackets in their hand. Is that what you're
saying? I think so. It's actually kind of funny because, you know, you see a lot of these guys go down to voluntary for the combine, and stuff like that, and they pick up rackets and they want to learn how to play tennis, and of course they're like, you know, 19, 20, 21 coming out of college and everything, and so they're not going to be, you know, killing anyone, but they pick it up so quick, and they're so passionate about it, and it's just like the thought definitely goes through your mind, like, you know, what if, like, someone got this, you know, this amazing athlete, this amazing person, this amazing player as a kid and taught them tennis. It would be,
yeah,
it would be phenomenal. And I think, obviously, you know, we need to keep exposing kids of from all walks of life to tennis and just finding the most athletic players and, you know, throwing the resources into them for sure.
Yeah, and tennis is the, you know, one of the, I think it's the only sport where you can make a game ending or a game striking decision, you know, almost every time you touch that ball. You hit that ball in the right spot, frustrate that player on the other side of the net, you can win a game real fast. Football doesn't offer that. Basketball, the other sports, you know, you have to rely on team-type atmospheres. Tennis is not the case. It's an individual sport where we all know that the superior athletes end up playing, and we need to get more of those professional athletes involved in this sport for sure.
Definitely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Well, Jamia, my last question I have for you today is in your opinion, where is the future of American tennis? Where is it going?
Where is it going? I don't know. I mean, that's a question. I mean, I'm really, really excited about our future, being around, being in Boca a little bit. I was training there for a while, so I go home to vacation there for a little bit and seeing the players that are coming out of there and the kids who are playing in the hard courts and how the girls did at U.S. Open this year. I mean, I think that it looks really strong, and it looks very diverse, which I think is fantastic, from Sloan to Irina to Christina. I mean, you're hitting a lot of different groups there, and they're all working hard, and they're all lifting each other up. So I don't know where the next champion is going to come from, but I think we're on the right road, and hopefully, you know, as it's going in the next few years, we'll see Americans duking it out at the top for the number one ranking again. So
that's very good, Jamia. Now, I'd like to give you an opportunity, if someone out there is listening and would like to get in touch with you or send a player to Oklahoma State, how do they do that?
You can email me. My email is Jamia. My first name is J-A-M, as in mother, E-A-J, at okstate.edu. Of course, I have my phone. I'm on that constantly. I have a Facebook. I have a Twitter, all under my name. And if you have any players, like, let me know for sure. So, yeah, those are definitely the opportune ways to contact me.
Well, Jamia, we want to thank you for coming on the air today. We look forward to starting a relationship with you and keeping this going and maybe getting you back on sometime in the spring and letting us know how OK State's doing in the Big 12. And I want you to have a great day and a great weekend.
Thank you so very much for having me. I really, really enjoyed it. Yeah, and I would definitely love to come on again. So just let me know and have a fun day out playing tennis. It sounds like it's lovely.
You bet, Jamia. We'll be in touch soon. Thanks.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Miss Jamia Jackson, a wonderful personality in the tennis world. She is taking a chance to get her education finished up at Oklahoma State, which we truly admire. I want to thank Chris Young for giving her that opportunity there at Oklahoma State. We know that she's going to contribute to the program and to that university tremendously, and look forward to hearing about good things from those Cowgirls up there. Thank you for listening to today's show. I want to remind you that if you'll go to iTunes and rate our show, we would appreciate it. It's a way that we get exposure. I want to remind you that we're on the air every week from 2 to 3 on Tuesday. Next week we have Mr. Ken McAllister. He's the executive director from the Texas section here in the USTA on board. We're looking forward to that. If you'd like to look up Hat, you can go to www.hattennis.com. That's H-A-A-T
tennis.com, and we look forward to having some people visit there, and look forward to future shows. We keep getting better and better guests, and we'll have Jamia back on the air and in the future. And those of you that are able to hit tennis balls today, we want to wish the best luck. Remember, you got to get it over the net, and always get ready for it coming back, because the better you get, the better it comes back. So have a great day, and see you next week.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard-to-recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.